Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the incredible Creekside Room, today's speakers are Barbara and Mike Burr, and they will be speaking on triangles and other painful shapes. So let's listen in on Barbara and Mike Burr.
I'm Mike Burr.
And I'm Barbara Burr.
And we are doing a session on families and stepfamilies called Triangles and Other Dangerous Shapes, or painful shapes, something like that. We had to come up with an imaginative and creative title, and it was late.
40 characters.
Right. So whether or not the title relates to what we talk about will be your decision. We'll have a vote at the end.
At the risk of boring those of you who have been in class before, we should probably let you know who we are. We've been married for 7 years, and we have 3 children between us. We don't have any that is ours because we couldn't figure out who paid the child support.
So.
Mike is a pastor, and he has his doctorate of ministry in step families in the church. And I'm trained as a teacher, but right now I work in a public library, so I'm the book person. And people that I work with know me so well that when this book came into the library, they just automatically checked it out for me before they even asked me. So this is nice. And I've also helped to build the collection at the library by giving them suggestions of what types of books might be on the shelf.
For folks who want resources, either personally or for family or professionally, would recommend both of these books. They're in the bookstore. This one is a lot cheaper in the bookstore than I paid for it, which I won't tell you how that makes me feel. it's in paperback now. Making peace in your stepfamily.
By
Harold Bloomfield. And the other is Strengthening Your Stepfamily by Elizabeth Einstein, who is a person who's been doing research in the field of stepfamilies and living in stepfamilies for a number of years. Bloomfield is a psychiatrist and is also in a stepfamily, and so is very well acquainted with the dynamics. Both good books for laying out the basics of what stepfamily living is about.
Barbara forgot to say that both of you are stepfamilies, stepparents.
We are right. Both stepparents.
Yeah.
Right. In stepfamilies, one of the things that you get is a lot of different configurations. There are very simple stepfamilies. Quotes where you might have a woman who has one child marries a man who has never been married before. That's a pretty simple structure of a step family. We have on the other hand, more complex structure of a step family. We both have children, so we're step parents to one another's children. We both have exes out to their who periodically lob their mortars in to our home.
I like that.
I'd like to know, have you melded your family, or are they still yours and not? They're your children and my children.
I think one of the things that happens in step families is probably 75% of the time, children will, to some degree, remain, yours and mine.
I call them my girls.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and then sometimes when somebody looks at me on the street with 3 of them and says, "Are those all yours?" I'm very quick to point out that I really couldn't have been. The girls are only 9 months apart, so I'm very quick to point out that no. But sometimes we're a step family in our minds, and sometimes we're a family, and my children, if anybody calls Mike their dad, they are very quick to say he's not our dad. Because their dad just lives four blocks away.
And they spend a great deal of time with him. Same thing.
Not to say that they don't care very much about him.
Yeah, I have a very good relationship with him. Same thing goes with my daughter. She'll say, no, your part is mine. I said, my mother lives in Spokane. One of the things that you find with stepchildren is that there is a primary identification that continues with the biological parent.
Do they refer to each other as sister and brother or sisters, whatever you're, I don't know what?
Sometimes. Sometimes they'll say my sister or sometimes they'll say my stepsister. I think maybe it depends on the context and whether they're mad at each other. I'm not sure, but and somebody was saying it was hard because their children call the other person mommy, and I was saying, well, Ruth comes back and she calls Mike mommy. It's just a slip, just by accident.
But the relationship between our children is very good. The two girls are 9 months apart, and they're just very tight. Are good friends. So. Now you have a complex step family, or
it's more the simple one.
No, we have a very simple one.
A very simple one. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Patty, you have a complex
step. Yeah.
How about, are you here to learn, or do you have friends?
Our daughter, married man with three children.
Oh,
so she's
right. Okay, so.
We have step kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's simple because basically they were in college when we met and married, and I have no spouse, and he's congenial with his. So simple
so
in
nice.
That the relationship was between the two of them.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how you I wasn't going to talk, was I?
Go ahead. How we defined it?
Well, no, as far as our situation.
It'd be simple in that.
It started out simple, but then he adopted. So that gives a whole different flavor to, because our daughter looks at him as her dad.
Mm-hmm.
It was done very young.
And so has her biological father then been out? Just totally
he's been out of the picture, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
sort of.
And has she had any kind of loyalty then or curiosity?
No.
Sometimes that adoption thing works very well like that. Very often, though, what the adoption becomes is a way of assuaging the feelings of the step parent,
mm-hmm.
and it ends up backfiring.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of that biological bond between parent and child, and even if a parent is dead, they can have loyalty to the memory or to the fantasy of what that parent would. Would have been like, or might have been like. They would have obviously been, since they were their parent, super dad, super mom. Never cross word. Always gentle and understanding.
That fantasy.
Yeah.
We're not going to get through.
Okay.
We wanted to do a little exercise, and we were going to have Ted help us a little bit, just real quick.
Oh. Good. Just set this up that you're a friend, and you're visiting us. We're a couple, and we get into it about what happened last night.
And this has nothing to do with step-parents.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with step-parents. But what your role is to help us settle our differences. know, you were great. You know, and
you're a friend to both of us.
You know, you're a friend to both of us, and you want the best for us.
Ted, I am so mad. He came home last night.
Yeah.
And he about 2 a.m. He sauntered in. He was drunk.
Where are you always
picking on him?
And he was at a bar, and I don't know what he was doing in a bar, but you know, his wedding ring was not either.
Why are you always picking on me?
It sounds like
you are such a jerk.
Look, you know what I do in my private time, you know.
I believe you can sell your own product.
But she's always picking on me, you know.
But Michael, what was going on last night?
Well, I was just out enjoying myself a little, and you know.
No, I saw you at 10 o'clock. You said you wanted to go home.
Well, you know, I got sidetracked, and you know, if you would just, you know, help her understand, you know, that, you know, guys have to have an outlet sometimes, you know, and let off some steam, you know, then, you know, it would be a lot simpler in our household.
She's not looking too good about what you just said, but what does that seem to sound like? Do you think you need some time out?
No, you guys are all like, you're always sticking up for each other. I mean, really.
No, but that's
I wish you'd just go home and let us fight it out.
No, well, I want to stay here. That's the most important
thing. I wish you'd go because we'll fight it out.
They have their selling ice cream down the street.
Thanks, thank you. Go for it. That's my
point.
That's great.
Anyway, you know, what we're trying to demonstrate here is triangulation. And this is a phenomena that happens in stepfamilies, families,
friends,
businesses,
lovers.
Where?
Lovers,
yeah, especially when you get three of them.
And you notice how we switched around? Yes. Mm-hmm. Did you notice how he was my friend at the beginning and then I got
turned on him?
Because I didn't support you.
Right.
Yeah. Way to go. I really appreciate it.
The last girlfriend, when I was on her side.
But the whole thing with triangles is that you have three positions that develop relationally. And it ends up being a wonderful way to fight. And the three positions in the triangle are victim, and yet victim, you have to have somebody make them a victim. So you have a persecutor. And, you know, if you have a persecutor, you know, you all obviously have to have somebody to come to the rescue. So you have a
rescue.
Savior. Don't get theological about it.
A rescuer, unless you're in the church and then you have a savior. And what happens in interpersonal dynamics is that people get into these kinds of relationships and they get a ball rolling that can just go on and on and on and on and never resolve anything. And one of the things that we were trying to demonstrate in our little role play here is that these roles are very often fluid. You know, we're talking here, she's upset with me. You know, I'm the victim, she's the persecutor. I recruit Ted as the rescuer, she jumps in, still persecutor, but makes Ted the victim. Then I become the rescuer of Ted. You know,
roles change.
And roles change around and around and around. It gets real convoluted and crazy. Okay, now, in families, and in step families, you know, you have just a variety of different ways that the, you know, the rescuer and the persecutor and the victim can play out. One of the classics is, we've all heard the myth of the wicked stepmother. You know, that's where the poor stepdaughter, generally, is the victim. The stepmother persecutes, and the father hides.
Often.
You know, the father comes in.
Was out in the ice cream.
Yeah, and needs ice cream. And, you know, tries to rescue the stepdaughter, or rescue the stepmother sometimes, you know, but whatever he does, he is wrong in somebody's eyes. And that's the essence of being triangulated, is being torn in relationship. And so, you know, if he comes in to rescue the stepdaughter, you know, the stepmother says, you know, aren't you my husband? You know, shouldn't you be standing by my side and taking my part with this little snot-nosed kid? And he's going, well, he comes in and supports the stepmother, you know.
And the daughter.
The stepdaughter's going, Daddy, I'm your daughter. How could you?
And Irma Bombeck, last week we read one of her stories where she gave Cinderella's stepmother an input. Any of you read that? Stepmother and second oldest.
Wonderful story. Wonderful.
Anyway, if you get a chance to read it, she does Snow White, Hansel and Gretel, and Cinderella. And what she's basically doing is putting the stepmother, the victim role, in her stories. So she switches the stories around.
Mm-hmm. Cinderella's...
The roles.
Yeah.
She switches the roles around.
Cinderella's the persecutor?
Yeah. Well, Cinderella's stepmother is Buffy Holtzinger. And... Cinderella's father, you know, Buffy married Cinderella's father, and then he immediately split to go find himself, leaving this egotistical, lazy stepdaughter there to, you know, complain and moan about everything that she did.
So check it out. It's Irma Bombeck's Motherhood, Second Oldest Profession, and it's for stepmothers with bad PR.
Okay, does this stuff about triangles fit at all for you? Can you identify this kind of dynamic going on in your own lives?
I see it, and I'm often the victim.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he and her.
The truth comes out.
I am often the victim, or I feel that I am the victim.
Uh-huh.
And I see it.
Test.
I, Yeah.
Get your biological mother.
I'm biological mother, yes.
But it flips back and forth. Yeah. The twist about this stuff is that everybody in the triangle can end up feeling the victim.
Well, I think because I guess my demands and my expectations, and I'll speak to the child part because I have lots of respect for. I mean, I've tried to go through those developmental stages but during the early years. I guess I was the one that kind of set the rules, and if she felt they were too tough, then she would go to him, and then there were times when they were changed and I was left out, and that was holy war. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And
great example there, you're setting the rules. So you're playing the role of persecutor there. You know, your poor daughter who has to live up to them. You know, she plays the victim. You know, Ted comes home. You know, she gets him off in private. You know what Mom is doing? You know what she's trying to make me do? You know, so Ted becomes rescuer, changes the rules. She then, in a way, becomes persecutor, and you become victim, and it all switches around.
And I have a good example in a first-time family where my boss and her husband have two daughters, and the first daughter moved out to go to college. Then it was the three of them. And the youngest daughter wanted cable TV after they had made a decision on cable TV. Dad goes and orders the cable TV, and the mother is fit to be tied. She was not in this decision that should have been made with the parents. And it's story after story. So it isn't necessarily in step families only.
Okay, now one of the things that makes the step family more complex is that you'll very often have more than three people. So you can have just a wonderful maze of triangles going on between parents and different children. You know, you might have the stepmother being a rescuer with one child, a persecutor with another child, and a victim with a third child. And in different relationships, people will play different parts, and so it gets just wonderfully convoluted.
And you can also be pulling in people from the ex-spouse. In our situation, we were very much triangulated with my ex-spouse, and so it was the three of us doing this little
struggle.
Right.
Struggle, true.
And sometimes, I mean, it's interesting, and I don't know how much work you've done on this. It's this configuration, and then a new baby comes into play.
Yes.
No, we have not done much.
Because then, I won't get into it, so
well,
I'm not talking to that. 20 off.
Speaking of no technology.
So. 20 minutes.
What the new baby does is just sets a new overlay. Mm-hmm.
The configurations increase.
Right. And part of what we want to get to is how not to get trained. Because this is the stuff that kills people. The sharp angles of the triangle that cut people up as people switch roles and never find any resolution to the dynamics that are going on in the family.
We also
lied
because we said other painful shapes. We really only have one other painful shape. Okay, well, these are some of our circles or self-reinforcing spirals, or we're calling coalitions. And I've got four different models here, which I'll move down. The first one is when you have too strong of an adult coalition, and that's T-O-O. Okay, so you can see what happens in the circle. The children start to feel helpless. Children withdraw or band together, less family cohesiveness, and round it goes. You had an example from your own step family life?
Yeah.
You want to share?
I was raised in a step family, and my mother and my stepfather were just always together, and you know, they worked together, you know they played together. And one of the things that did within the family was separated them off and made for a sense of abandonment with all of the children. You know, so you know, me and my brothers, you know, we just became sort of a group among, you know, unto ourselves, which meant less family cohesiveness, which meant then more of an authoritarian kind of reaction coming from the parents, which, you know, made us feel even more left out and made us pull together even more, and it was just this negative self-reinforcing spiral, because there was no sense of cohesiveness and inclusion.
And I also sense, I don't have any hard data for this, but I sense that the children often feel that it's too strong of an adult coalition, no matter whether it is or not. You know, if it's like, Daddy, you've changed since Barb's come along. You know, you two are together, and I'm always left out. And when my children are not there, when his daughter comes, she'll come in, say her hi's and everything, and then she goes down to her room and reads. Because she senses, I think, that what we have is too strong for her to break through, even though that's not what we're trying to do as adults. We're trying to be.
So I have to go retrieve her.
But you have to be aware of
that. And welcome her into the.
Yeah.
How old is she?
Be 11. This is.
We've been married 7 years.
Now she lives with her biological mother.
Now.
When we were first married, she lived with us.
Okay.
For 4 years.
So
you can change your visitation arrangements. Mm-hmm. To say they're never set in stone.
And then your children do you have joint custody with your children?
Well, for all intents and purposes, actually, I clapped it out because I heard that they never spend enough time with their dad. And it turns out that waking time, not including school, they spend actually more time with their father, even though I'm the custodial parent, which I think is fine. I think they have benefited greatly from being with them.
It's interesting, our daughter, when she married John, they had 3 children, and it was the mother who had left when their youngest, who was adopted, was only 6 months old. And she has not kept the children since. Our son-in-law had them for 5 years until he and my daughter got married. But now it was interesting because the children, especially the youngest, didn't like this idea of a woman in her life. Because she had her dad and her 2 brothers. And so there was really a very tough adjustment year of her not being happy with this woman in her life. And the mother, who didn't want the child, she said, but would call every 2 or 3 months, just enough so that she seemed like the fairy godmother. Mm-hmm. Because she had no responsibilities, but she would say, oh, how are you? You know, this kind of talk, and oh, I know it's tough for you, and so on, but wouldn't ever want to have her. So she appeared to the child like this wonderful person who remembers her at her birthday and sends her presents, and you know, doesn't have to.
No other time.
No, yeah, no. There's no rules. I mean, you know, as far as she's concerned, the mother would not ever have any of these rules. So it's a real hard thing for the child, I think.
It is.
To try to see things in perspective.
It's considered to be, in that sense, there's some research where the more the mother, I think in this case it is the mother, is away from the children, the more of this fantasy bond is created, and the harder it is for the stepmother
to bond.
Because mom isn't there, and so they create all this in their mind, and how wonderful mom really is.
And you know, part of what you're talking about there is just natural stuff we've talked about in other sessions, that one of the hard things with children with remarriage is that very often for the children it's a loss of relationship with their biological parent with this interloper coming in.
Yeah, there's a lot. It sounds like there's some definite issues there. It's not really like the mother's dead.
No.
And it's not like the mother's involved either.
No.
As a joint custody parent.
Right.
It's kind of
but just enough.
Yeah.
That she.
And we did do a session on loss, and if you have time you might listen to the tape, because we talked a lot about loss from the child's point of view. I'm going to go on to the next coalition, and this is the strong parent-child coalition, where the step-parent feels left out, and then the step-parent and step-child don't get along because there's blaming, and then the blaming starts with the poor couple relationship. And quite frankly, as we were prepping and going through this, we were having a few little old wounds come up. And this one is ours. This is our coalition that was a problem. And so Mike decided to explain it to you instead of me explaining to you about the coalition, because it probably came out a little bit more mellow.
Since she's the
I'm
one
the
who has...
poor step parent that was left out.
And you know, this is probably one of the main problems that step families encounter. You know, coming out of a single parent family, you know, there's, you know, obviously, you know, they have strong bond with the stepchildren. And there's very often a sense of guilt on the part of the step parent about, you know, the divorce, you know, the amount of pain that has been.
Is that what was going on for you?
Yeah. Let me make this personal.
Yeah, I do.
Oh.
It's okay, Mike.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But one of the things in it.
Hey,
in
wait.
Okay.
You're rescuing him now.
You're right. You know, so.
When
you
see the first skater.
So, one of the things that happened was that, you know, in our relationship, was that. You know, I wanted to protect my daughter from any more pain. But coming into a step family in and of itself is stressful. You know, because there is adjustment and change that is necessitated on everybody's part. But I wanted to protect her from that. So when Barb was wanting Ruth to make adjustments and changes, you know, I was getting resentful and, you know, stepping in, trying to protect her. And then at that point, Barb felt unsupported and resentful that this child was more important to me than she was. You know, and as that happened, Barb felt left out. You know, the relationship between Ruth and Barb was real poor for quite a while. And consequently, the two of us fought.
And of course, there were other factors, as in the triangulation where the custody arrangement was for all ostensible purposes worked out, but in reality, biological mom did not want daughter living with us. So she was pumping her, saying, you don't have to like Barb, and
she's
you
not your
really
mother.
Want to come live with me. It was every weekend, you really want to come live with me. So, you know, that was a factor.
Yeah.
It certainly was.
That was tough.
Yeah, it was very,
That's a common one with step parents.
Yeah.
I think so.
Especially I have two couples that
wanted to protect.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the ones that I've had brief involvement with are in that kind of a bind. So it's
mm-hmm.
more than others.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was part of it, but certainly not all of it. So,
you resolved it by...
I got deathly ill. Seriously, I came down. I had cancer, and I don't think that's why I had cancer. But I had cancer, and then everything broke loose.
No, certainly changed our priorities.
And then after I got, then after I went into remission, Ruth came back after the summer and was having a very difficult time adjusting, and I knew that I might not get well if I had to deal with interactions of crying all the time, and that I just knew that I couldn't do it. And I said, Mike, she really needs to go live with her mother now. And, you know, that was hard for him, very, very hard.
Which is really what she needed to do anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, she really needed to have that experience of her biological anyway. And, you know, it's hard for me to say that because, her mother and I, we had reasons for getting a divorce, and so,
I do wonder how...
I still don't totally approve of her lifestyle or parenting.
And I do wonder how many people end up with some serious illness. It would be interesting. Do you have any...
I have two ongoing clients now, two families, and the illness is not just with one person. However, I mean they're not as serious as yours was, Barbara, but nevertheless, it's illness where one, two, or three of them are constantly in the hospital. Or going constantly to doctors. In fact, I had one of their physicians to call me and to ask me if I thought they needed to be on antidepressant medication, and I said no.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're working through these...
You need to work out their issues.
Right.
Well, and as I reflect, Ruth was very ill. She caught ear, cold after cold after cold, and nobody else. You know, it was really the two of us. So, interestingly enough, her mother has come down with diabetes.
Well, the one that is in the hospital, I mean, that's in and out of the hospital the most, is the daughter, and it's her father. This one is real complicated because he has, when I started working with him, he was coming out of his second divorce, which was not, her mother was way up the line. I mean, it's so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And this little girl, she's turned 11 since I've been working with the family. She just doesn't trust anyone. And then there she has a mother who's really into the art world. And she won't express anger. She's really going into a depression, and she's the one that I said no. I mean, we won't have antidepressant medication. But she, and not only that, she is gaining more and more weight, which is another symptom of her depression. But I've lost my thought. What I wanted to say.
Yeah, we were just talking. mainly about
well, illnesses. What I want to say is that she has multiple losses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because she has, her dad has taken her through all of these relationships with all of these marriages.
And that's one of the things that you find is that, well, divorce is hard on the children.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, difficult readjustments. What becomes devastating is a series of losses. And you know, the loss of a step family can be very pivotal and very, very destructive.
Okay, quickly, I'm going to. Now, this is two, as in the number two, strong parent child coalitions where it can turn into an armed camp.
Like, and then you have me and my kid against you and your kid.
And I think that's there right. Were some days when it felt like that. I think these are almost more of a state of being than just a temporarily, once in a while sort of thing. And then, of course, it's a very little cohesiveness and four-step sibling relationships. We were talking about trying to find an example from our personal experience or our friends, and really couldn't find anything where we had the two armed camps. And potential is there.
Now, you have two children. Were those two children ever, let's see, parent-child? I know that my example, I was going to ask if your children kind of guarded against your child.
No,
the only thing I ever hear them say is, well, we know that Mike would discipline Ruth. That would be, you know, and I don't get into that with them. Because then
are your children older?
They're all in the same age bracket. But I think for that two-armed camp to form, that would mean that I would have a strong parent-child coalition with them. And I really don't. And I think part of that for me has been that I have two children. I haven't really formed a real strong coalition. And also just my own modeling with my own parents of a little bit of separation. I love them dearly and I nurture them, but they're not my friends. And I don't seek friendship or solace with them, which I think is what happens sometimes in the parent-child coalition, is you're seeking solace with one another. You're filling that need that the spouse could be filling. So I see that's probably how we've avoided that particular.
I think this is more likely to develop where people come together with teenagers and children too, and where they've been single parents for some time.
It's kind of like the Brady Bunch in reverse. Okay. And then,
can you move that one over your head?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Good.
Okay, then the last one is a strong remaining ex-spouse coalition. And the new spouse becomes insecure, then there's poor step-parent-step-child relationship, and then obviously the poor couple relationship, which is the key to everything going down the tubes, is if there's a poor couple relationship. We again had a little disagreement on how we viewed what was going on. I felt like there was a coalition with his ex-spouse, not positive, but there was a coalition where she was continually calling and telling him what to do, and I think it takes. I think if you're working with your old dynamics, the two of you have been working this way for 18 some years, and it's hard to fall out of that and to try something new. And it probably did take me breaking that.
Part of what that was my ex would call with stuff, and I would do my habitual interaction with her, which is part of why we broke up, which is I would ignore it. She had you know, do this stuff. I would ignore it, you know, but Barb would still see it as involvement and interaction. And so while I wasn't, you know, I was funny, I don't care what she, you know, what she says.
The front.
You know, Barb still experienced it as in involvement, and so, you know, what it finally took was me to say, you know, please don't write me these letters, you know.
Just don't send me bottles of champagne for my birthday. Just don't send me t-shirts when you just happen to pick one up.
Ooh. There were some dynamics going on, weren't there?
Yeah.
It finally got to the point where we wrote her a letter together and said, if you send another thing, we will send it back to you. And she did send another thing, and we did pack it up and did send it back. And what's interesting, what you can get connected with, were what she did was said, oh, you're being so immature, Mike. And so what was happening was she was expecting to respond to her the way they had for 18 years. He chose a new route of responding, and so she had to find a new tactic.
Yeah, but what it was kind of a territorial thing of, you know, setting the boundaries of our home and saying, you know, this is our home now, you know, and, you might be, you know, concerned about what's happening with Ruth, but if you want to know, ask me, but you don't get to influence what happens.
And I think about your son and the ex-wife, and her behavior is very destructive to the children. And at some point, he will probably have to speak with her.
The daughter.
Directly.
Yeah.
Your son-in-law. It's your son-in-law who will probably have to speak directly to his ex-wife about how she is creating havoc. And another example, I gave this example yesterday, was of a man who had married 8 years later. It was his son's graduation, and the ex-wife said, your new wife can't come. And he obeyed. And there's already havoc over that.
Okay, I don't have much time left here. Want to get into those, you know, some of the ways that, you know, we can avoid triangulation, the self-reinforcing negative spirals.
Or if we can't avoid it, we can get out of it.
Yeah.
What
we're looking for essentially in family structure is something where you know, everybody has connection, inclusion, and a sense of belonging. Now, in the step family, you know, that looks different than in the first time nuclear family, but it is achievable. You know, where everybody has a sense that they have their niche and their part within the family and within the family structure.
And we have about 8 solutions, but if you've got more to add.
Well, I wanted to add another one in there right at the beginning.
Oh, I liked my last one.
Stealing it out of the dining.
Well, we should maybe make our last one first, and that is pray a lot.
And you say that in Holden Village.
And that's said tongue-in-cheek, partially, but it's also very, very, very serious.
Very real.
If you have the sense that God is the head of the house, and that you can trust that and seek God's will, you're a lot more willing to go with different flows than with your own solution for things. And so
don't pray as a last resort, like I'm afraid sometimes we do.
Yeah. Start there.
Start, yeah. Why did I put this number
here?
One
of the tools, that I like for developing in occlusion is one that is suggested by a lot of folks, and that's family meetings, family councils, family conferences, whatever you want to call times where the family comes together and is able to share concerns, where leadership of the meeting is shared. There's are a number of resources that talk about how to run family meetings, but that's one of the ways of getting everybody involved. Even if kids are just coming every other weekend or once a month, when they come, have the family get togethers.
Okay, another obvious solution is to try to maintain a balance between the couple relationship and the child relationship, and trying to always remember that the couple relationship is primary. Okay, so that deals with number two, that you don't want to have a strong child-parent coalition. But again, you can't be too strong with the two parents, or you don't have the children in there. Spend adequate time as a couple. Go on dates. You're supposed to. Another one was lock the door with a sign that says, "Don't knock unless you're bleeding or the house is on fire." But create time for yourself on a basis, on a weekly basis. But then again, you also need to create time with each individual child. You need to create time as a family, if you can. I know it's harder when you've got teenagers. Step-parents need to make sure that they do things with individual step-children. If you can, get to that point where you can go to a movie together or whatever it is that the child suggests. That's a way to make sure they feel included. Also, as a couple, learn to communicate your feelings, not just your thoughts.
One thing that I suggest to a lot of families that I'm counseling is that the adults take some kind of communication class together. Even if people have been through communication training before. Taking a class together will give you a common language and a common set of concepts to use in dealing with one another and dealing with the children. It helps create a common foundation.
And also, especially if one person hasn't been a parent, is to take a parenting class together.
Really?
And there are some step-family books out there that are geared just toward the person that marries someone with children but has never been a parent. There are books specifically for them out there. Very, very well written, too. And I think another really important one for remarried families is learn to conflict effectively, not like what I did there where I was yelling at him and pushing.
Fighting fair.
Yeah.
Fighting fair. And learn to conflict. Mm-hmm. To deal with those issues. What happens with step families is they think they failed once, they're not going to fail again.
So
by God, they're not going to fight it out.
They resist the fighting.
They push it under the carpet, and then those are invariably the families at 3 and 4 years that break up. And we gave statistics last time that were pretty grim. 60-70% of remarried families will break up within 10 years. And a lot of them happen at the 3 and 4 year point. So counseling, step family support groups, books.
Communication classes, parenting classes.
It's
you use the whole spectrum. I mean, reading.
The ideal to read it together.
The fancy name for that is bibliotherapy.
Bibliotherapy.
In our relationship.
And play therapy.
Play together. That was going on the date. One thing that they mentioned about going out on dates was that oftentimes, when you first start doing that, you've got so much anger built up that you spend the whole date out. You know, you go to the drive-in movie and you're arguing about what your friend is. You know, and that kind of thing. But I think that we, our own process of learning to conflict fairly has been a long road to hoe, and Mike had to kind of learn to express his anger.
You know, I came from a family where we never thought that, you know, nobody was ever angry in all of the 37 years that I've lived. And so, you know, first time that we got into an argument, she comes from an Italian family, which is not necessarily quiet about her anger. You know, she's blowing up all over the place and going round, round, round. I'm going, well, you whatever you think, and it's like she stopped dead in her tracks.